return for USC with needs a big one. Jones breaks free. Jones on the gas pedal. Down the sideline. Touchdown, Trojans.
Now, back to Cofield and Company in the Findlay Toyota Studio.
All right, big return from Southern Cal. Comes out of game number one with a victory, but all not well with the Trojans. Quarterback issues. Arash Markazi, our guy in L.A., L.A. Times columnist, is up here as we have plenty to get to in SoCal sports news. Arash, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. You're very laid back today, but you seemed very upset about the status right now, the state of L.A. Sports Talk Radio. What the hell is going on at ESPN 710?
Yeah, they're going with nationally syndicated radio from 10 a.m. to 3. You got Stephen A. Smith from 10 to noon, and then noon at 3. You got the Will Cain Show. Makes no sense at all. This is the number two sports market in the country. We got two teams in every league. Most of those teams are competing right now for a championship. So, perfect example today at the noon, Fred Rogan, Rodney Peake go on the air at 570 talking about the Dodgers, talking about USC, and then on 710 on Will Cain, it's Ezekiel and his contract situation with the Cowboys, and as you can imagine, not too many people in Los Angeles care about that. So, listen, it's a cost-cutting move. I get it, but it makes no sense if you want to be the sports station here in Los Angeles.
You're a former ESPN guy. Were you able to reach out to ESPN LA and get a comment? I don't know if they're going to be willing to speak about it. What's their reasoning?
I get where they're coming from in terms of having to cut costs, in terms of, when you pay Stephen A. Smith and Will Cain the amount that they're currently paying them, you want to get them on all your owned and operated stations, and they currently only have two now. They basically gave up on Chicago. So they have Los Angeles and they have New York, and so I get it, but when you have people in Connecticut making those moves, they have to realize, that is a losing endeavor. They are not going to be the sports talk station in Los Angeles if they choose to go that route.
Arash, what if I said, L.A. sucks as a sports town. That's why it didn't support local shows. It's your fault, L.A. Step up.
I don't think this has anything to do with the numbers, because they moved Steve Mason and John Ireland, and that was their most successful show, but now it's going to go head-to-head with Petros and Money, the most popular show on 570, and so
I think we lost him. We'll find him. He dropped out.
We'll find him. Send out a carrier pigeon.
Well, it's big news.
It is, absolutely.
ESPN LA is the number two market in the country, and they have no local shows in the middle of the day. And as Arash said, you could have breaking news at any moment, and you could have – and this is nothing against Will Cain or Steve. I love Stephen A. I think he's freaking awesome. But the Will Cain part makes no sense. It's tricky because, hey, we do it. We tape delay and use Levitard in the middle of the day. Sure. I hope we go local. At some point, I guess management here could be like, LA doesn't do it. Shut up about Vegas going local. I think, one of the big stations in the market, and I guess it's 570. Arash, you were closing out sort of defending the L.A. sports fans. By the way, I don't think L.A. sports fans suck. That's kind of the East Coast attitude that you'll get when they see this. So finish what you're saying.
No, it's never going to be the most popular station in town. It's never going to be the fan in New York or WIP, or it's never going to be like that, but it can be successful. But it's only going to be successful if you have a local sports host talking about local teams. It's not going to be successful by having nationally syndicated show like Stephen A. Smith or Will Cain broadcasting from New York. Imagine this: we get to October, it's Dodgers, it's Lakers, it's USC football, and you tune on to Will Cain and they're talking about the Cowboys and the Yankees and something else.
Arash, what's your opinion on this on the large? Steve kind of hinted on it. Well, they could say that here in Vegas. Management could say, well, LA's not doing it. So what does that mean for radio, in your opinion, when you look at some of the other markets? Maybe not Vegas, but Chicago. There are plenty of other markets out there. Detroit, do you think this is an indictment on the business as a whole?
It could be. I think anyone under 30 may not be tuning into terrestrial sports talk radio. They may have their favorite podcast. They may be tuning into something else. But, you know, generally speaking, and Steve brought that up, I mean, no disrespect, but I mean, I think it would be crazy to have taped delayed national broadcast. So, I mean, I think Las Vegas as a sports town is doing really, really well. It's a great sports town. So, you know, if you can't broadcast a show live, you should have a live sports talk show. Again, you guys have local teams now. You know, you have the Vegas Golden Knights. You're going to get the Las Vegas Raiders. And, you know, so I think the sports market there is good enough where you can either have live local shows, which you really should have, or if you're going to play something from a national perspective, that should be live.
It's Rosh, LA Times sports columnist, wrote a story, and I want to get into the subject of the story, specifically a host from the past here. We'll get to that in a second. I don't have all the LA personalities memorized who were doing stuff in the past. Mason and Ireland were doing middays. Sedona was doing afternoon drive, right? But wasn't there, someone else was doing middays at one point too, right? Who was on?
Yeah,
was it Trudell and Michael Thompson?
Yeah, it was Michael Thompson and Mike Trudell. So 3 years ago, they had 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. all live, all local. I mean, that mm-hmm. was a really cool moment in terms of, you know, I think a sports town like Los Angeles should have that. Now, they scaled that back. Instead of Trudell Thompson, they went with Stephen A. Smith, and now they've even scaled that back by moving, John and Steve to the 3-6 slot. And now Sedano slot's in a tough situation because when it's the NBA season, that 6:30 to 9 slot, he won't have a show. So it doesn't make any sense. Again, when you talk about 10 a.m., I think it's like 9 or 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., not having a single live local show in Los Angeles, it makes no sense.
Yep. And I'm going to talk brass tacks, sports talk radio here. I'm not going to name names, but successful local sports talk radio, the hosts can't be doing 17 things and have their local gig as their third or fourth most important job. So I'm not going to name names, but if you're going to do shows, that has to be your main gig. And that's why I think some shows have not done well in the past, because it's like a side topic for people. Like, I mean, I'm obviously a radio junkie, and I'm a lunatic about prepping. I don't even know if we do a good show, but I know I try. So that's my commentary on that. I want you to mention, because we have a lot of LA transplants, and they remember Big Joe, who, you know, passed away way too early. But talk about your column and throwing back to the days when there was really good local sports talk in the area.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the column was on Joe McDonald and what he meant to Los Angeles. And, again, it is not known as a rabid sports town, but Joe just had this love and this passion for the teams of this city. And so it became destination sports talk, where, like, after a big game, and he loved the Lakers and he loved the Dodgers so much. And so, like, after a big game, you would want to tune into what Joe said. And not only that, he was a great reporter. I mean, he broke stories. He broke, you know, the Wayne Gretzky trade and Magic Johnson's return to the league. And so, not to have someone like that, I think, hurts any sports market as well.
Yeah, no doubt. Let's talk a little USC. First of all, what's the vibe around campus? I mean, I know that JT Daniels was challenged for the job, but my God, this is not what Clay Helton wanted, to have to hand it over to a youngin. Daniels down for the season, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was such a devastating. When he went down, I think everyone in the press box knew what it probably could be when he couldn't put any weight on his leg, and he grabbed his knee immediately. And, you know, their quarterback situation was kind of talked about a lot going into the season. I mean, they knew JT Daniels was their quarterback when Jack Sears went into the transfer portal. And so you go into the season with a freshman quarterback as your number two guy. There was this feeling of, well, you know, they really have to hope that JT doesn't get hurt or has to miss any time. And then the first half of the first game of the season, he tears his ACL and he's out for the season. So, you know, really puts Clay Helton and USC in a difficult position, because this was already going to be a tough first few games of the season for him, and in a make or break season where, you know, if they don't, you know, get to the Pac-12 championship game, I can't imagine him returning as the coach. It's really tough to look at their schedule and look at their quarterback play and really just look at, in general, the way that they played that first game of the season and imagine them having a successful season.
Arash, let me ask you this as we talk about some of your work that you put out. You just put out this story about this renovation that's happening at the Coliseum, $316 million. And one of the things that's going along with this, you talk about kind of a Ring of Honor aspect, jerseys up on the wall. No Reggie Bush, but the infamous O.J. Simpson is up there. Also, they're working on a mosaic, a mural, if you will. Same scenario, right? Let's not talk about Reggie Bush, but hey, the Juice, welcome with open arms. Arash, what is this university doing, and why are they missing the mark so badly on this very, what seemingly to a lot of people, at least myself, easy issue?
Yeah, it really makes no sense, you know, because right? They have so many amazing players that they could celebrate. And listen, I'm not saying to ignore the contributions that he's made. You know, keep his name in the media guide, keep his name in the history books. What he did, he did. You can't erase it. You can't take that away.
Right.
But at the same time, 2019, you're putting up new jerseys, you're putting up new pictures and posters. And how in the world in 2019, after we know what we know 25 years later, can you continue to celebrate, and that's the key point here, not ignore, but you're now celebrating the contributions of this man, makes no sense to me. And again, they've already kind of said what they feel about him. He is not allowed to come to practice. He is not allowed to come to games. He's not allowed really to come, you know, he wouldn't get any special treatment if he showed up to campus. So you've already made your opinion known on that front. How then can you continue to celebrate his contributions in this way?
Do you think this will be kind of the nail in the proverbial coffin? Like, you're coming out and talking about it, more people across the nation are talking about it. I wasn't even aware of it. As a Notre Dame fan, I despise USC. So if I was going to be aware of something, this would be something I would be aware of. It just, I just don't know how much longer this can continue, Arash.
Yeah, you know, yeah, the problem is so much time has passed, and you hate to feel that that makes things okay. But also, there's multi-millionaires who are in their 70s and who are very old, who really still, unfortunately, and I've heard from these people, hold this man in high regard, still hang their hat on the fact that he was acquitted, which is crazy to me that you would even hang your hat on that ruling. So I don't think a change is going to happen. I wrote the column, but some people agreed with it. But you would be amazed at the number of people who said, listen, you know, that was 25 years ago. And it's like, yes, two people got murdered 25 years ago. I mean, that doesn't make it okay. So, unfortunately, I don't see them changing it, but it still makes no sense whatsoever.
Arash, let's close on this. Do you know, is there one person, is there a group that is behind the anti-Reggie Bush attitude?
Well, it's really comes from the sanctions. The school has petitioned the NCAA to allow them to put his jersey up, for them to have him. You know, Steve, like, he's not allowed to come to campus, and he's currently working
for
Fox Sports. So this is no longer a USC thing. USC thing is working with the NCAA to try to get him to come back to school.
I didn't know that was the root of it. I figured it was some folks locally. Or the NCAA. Here, you know what's funny? What would happen if he showed up and they put up a banner or whatever? What would the NCAA do?
Like, I mean, technically, they could levy further sanctions.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine?
I know it sounds crazy, but it's true.
Oh, you know what? At that point, Larry Scott and the Pac-12 just split.
Screw it.
Yeah. And just leave the NCAA. These guys are out of control. All right, Arash, what do you got coming up this week? Anything good?
A little bit of Dodgers. I'll be at the USC Stanford game, and then the Chargers' first game of the season against the Colts. The new Colts.
Yeah. Nothing much, right? Nothing much.
Right? Exactly.
It's a slow time.
Yeah. It's another fun weekend here in Los Angeles sports.
All right, Arash. We miss you. We'll see you.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
There you go. Yeah, that radio thing's intriguing, isn't it? Mm-hmm. ESPN LA.
It is.
Should be a wake-up call, my friend, for radio hosts all over the country.
We talk about
nothing,
this all the time.
Nothing's guaranteed. And, hey, if they're not making money off it, I can tell you this. I don't know. I think Will Cain's going to be hated in L.A., and Arash was kind of chronicling. He did a little bit during that interview. I think Will Cain's pretty solid, but he obviously has to do a show for a national audience, and all of a sudden, he's in the middle of the day in L.A., so I just can't see many L.A. fans sticking with him unless they're tired of what's on the other station. It also completely screws sales.
100%.
I mean, who the hell is going to go out and pitch, you know, hey, advertise on the Will Cain show.
Advertise on a show that you can catch on television every single day. Talking about the same things you can catch on television every single day.
Like I said, I think it's a chicken and the egg thing where, yeah. Unfortunately, they put some shows in the middle of the day that were not great shows. Mason and Ireland's a good show, but they put some other shows in the middle of the day that weren't great shows, and they're like, see, it doesn't work. No, that show didn't work.
Right.
It'll work in the middle of the day, so for now, and it, believe me, 9 months from now, it could change. A year from now, it can change. If they're getting destroyed in the middle of the day by 570, then things will change.
Continue the Cofield and Company conversation on Facebook. Friend us at ESPN Las Vegas.
And Rodgers wants to throw. Long pass down the middle. Got a man open. And the pass is caught. That's a tremendous pass down the middle to Steve Jenkins, the freshman from Narbonne High School in Los Angeles. The Rebels pick up about 50 on that one. It's first and goal.
Now, back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
One of the big plays on Saturday. Big hookup towards the end of the half. The call courtesy of Learfield, Russ Langer. Caleb Herring also in the booth with him. Caleb gives a couple minutes here, as he's going to do every Tuesday. What's up, buddy?
What's up, man? How you doing?
Good. I thought that play before the half was gigantic. I mean, it led to a score, but there were so many times last year where the Rebels tried to run a two-minute drill. They were in the game. They didn't succeed with the two-minute drill, and then the other team came right down the field and scored, and it's a freaking backbreaker. That 14-point, 10-point turnaround can just kill you. So that was a good sign that they're able to hook up and actually finish off a score. I hope we see more of that this year.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, offensively, executing a two-minute drive, whether end of the half or end of the game, is one of the most pressure-filled, important moments of the game. And, it, you know, there's a lot that goes into executing it well. I think that was one of the better ones we've seen from UNLV all season. And the best part about it was I think they did it primarily through the air, which was like something that they usually don't do. They usually, in the past, have started off their two-minute drives with quarterback runs and draws and things like that to try to get those drives going. But Armani did it with his arm with that big play there, getting down in the scoring range and finished it, of course, with a touchdown run. So that, I mean, that's huge for UNLV that those kind of plays go their way instead of, like you said, the backbreakers where the other team takes it down and gets a field goal or something. It does a lot for your offense as far as confidence. It helps to build you up and say we can execute in one of the most clutch situations in football. So it's a good building block, albeit against Southern Utah. It's a good building block against anybody to execute a two-minute drill like that.
You talk about building blocks, and you talk about getting on the right side of things and being hopeful. Yes, Armani did it with his arm in that instance, but Caleb, you saw, well, I think a lot of us saw the main highlight from the game over the weekend was that great run that Armani had, then going close to the 15 and spinning out. Just a real highlight, real kind of, exposition. And this comes on after what was really a couple of slow drives to start the game. So, obviously, a lot to be excited about in that regard. How high are you after just 1 week and seeing those moves and seeing those highlights from Rodgers?
Well, I mean, I've always been high on him as a player, his potential. I mean, he's been a great runner since he started playing at UNLV. I mean, that's not been a secret. I think the thing was we wanted to see, and for a lot of reasons, everybody wanted to see him become a better passer. And it's just the nature of football these days where it's a quarterback-driven sport at this point in time. Whether it be the pros or college, the quarterback as a passer is kind of the highlight of a team. But there's plenty of programs that have been able to get it done with a running quarterback. Now, the thing with Armani, he's a true running quarterback. And if you build around his skills, he's good enough to carry you through a season if he's available. And I think that's the most exciting part to me looking at the team, that Armani slid, I think, three or four times and understands, I guess, in his maturation that he is more valuable when he's available. The best ability is availability, and that is the case with him. He has an amazing ability to affect the game with his legs, and you saw that with the 66-yard touchdown run. That was, you know, there was a point where I thought he's going to scamper out of bounds for 15, you know, at the 15-yard line, but with Armani and his stature, he's able to just plow through a defender and spin around and dive into the end zone. So he can affect. He's done that before as well. You know, he's had 50-plus yard touchdown runs in the past. So it's exciting to see the potential of what he can do and how he can affect the game. And if he's available for an entire season, I think he is enough, as well as the additional weapons that have added on the offensive side of the ball. And more importantly, the things that I saw from the defense this past week. I mean, Southern Utah is not the highest caliber opponent that you're going to find, but they had athletes on the offensive side of the ball, and the defense, just the eyeball test, looked really good. So the excitement that I had coming into the season and the potential that I had before is kind of been confirmed. Now, it's still a long season. There's a lot to do. There's a lot of execution that has to go along the way, but I'm excited, and the excitement has been affirmed by what I saw on Saturday.
The voice of former UNLV quarterback Caleb Herring. He's the color analyst on the radio during the games. He's also one of the co-hosts of the Tony Sanchez radio show. It's back tomorrow in the district at Parkway Tavern each week. They split between the two locations, the district, and on the west side at 215 and Flamingo. So give me a couple of players on defense who stood out for you.
Well, obviously, Rashad Jackson was the first one, and it was just his sheer stature on the field. I mean, he was huge in the middle at linebacker, and there was a lot of questions if he was going to be available and how much he was going to play because he didn't come on until late in camp. So the learning curve was a little bit of a worry, but he definitely proved why he was a valuable addition during the offseason coming from Florida, and he made his presence felt. I think he was second in tackles behind only Evan Ostry, and I think Evan Ostry was the other person that stood out to me defensively in the secondary, making a lot of tackles. And that was the real highlight for me for UNLV in the secondary. That's one of the question marks going forward in the season. But they did give up some catches, but the tackling seemed much better overall as a group defensively. But if I had to pick a name that stood out, it was Rashad Jackson. It's probably because I was watching him a lot more just to kind of see what he was all about. And he made his presence felt, to say the least.
What about on the defensive line? I mean, we didn't get to see a ton of those guys because there was heavy rotation. Did you see Southern Utah doing anything special with Dadashian?
No, I didn't see them doing anything special. I don't think they had a game plan for him. I think that the tempo of their offense and the quickness of the releases for, like, they had a lot of quick hitting plays. So the quarterback was getting rid of the ball quick. The runs were, you know, they're up on the line quick, and I think just the natural blocking scheme of those kind of inside zone reads, you get a lot of double teams up front. So I think that may have contributed to Nick having a little bit of a quiet game, but he definitely still made his presence felt. And anytime linebackers are making a lot of tackles like Jackson was, it's because the D-line is doing their job and occupying blockers and giving free lanes for the linebackers to run through. So I didn't see anything particularly special from any one individual on the defensive line. Of course, Gabe McCoy makes his return back. He didn't play at all last week. He'll be back in the lineup. So maybe a better chance with, you know, Arkansas State and their 50 pass attempts last week. Maybe there's a little bit more of a chance for that D-line to get aggressive and make more of an imprint on the game. But I think as a unit, that whole front seven, I think, worked well together. And not many made huge plays standing out to me, but I did have my eyes on Dashian, and he's going to be a factor in the season. I didn't notice any special game planning this week, but I think he's going to be a factor going forward.
Charles Williams had an awesome game. He's going to be the bell cow. Maybe get more carries than Lexington Thomas. He had 143 on 15 carries, and then they took the foot off the gas pedal with Charles in the middle of the third. Are you getting a little concerned about depth behind him? Because Chad Magyar was supposed to be a big contributor. Right now he's dealing with some issues off the field. And then Courtney Reese, poor little guy from Miami, true freshman, almost got broken in half. Now it looks like he may be back for – he's questionable this week. He may be back for Northwestern. But, you know, all of a sudden that depth at running back is being tested a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it works out better when it's a Charles Williams guy at number one, because he is a true every down back with his size and the way he plays. But it's a long season, and you do want to have more depth. It's something that the Rebels haven't really had an issue with, because they've had a three-headed monster at running back pretty much since Sanchez has taken over. But no, the way he runs, Charles Williams, he can be an every down back, so the depth isn't as much of an issue when he's healthy. But should he go down, there is some concerns. I know Darren Williams touched the ball a lot during the game, and he showed some glimpses that he had some burst to him as well. But maybe it's because Charles has separated himself so much from the pack that it seems like depth may be an issue. But I think everybody else, there's some solid running backs on the depth chart behind him, and Darren Williams, I think, was one that stood out to me over the course of last week's game that has some potential to make an impact as well.
I want you to talk about, you played quarterback, but you know, you have to know everything on the offense. I want you to talk about the maturation of the running back and the running back position, because one of the slight knocks on Charles in the past was, hey, you know what? when it's pass protect time, sometimes Charles wasn't concentrating, wasn't using the right technique. As a quarterback, talk about the challenge of kind of the mental challenge of having a running back in front of you who may be a great runner, but you know, you're looking, you're like, okay, is he going to make the block here? Is he going to be doing the right thing on this play?
Yeah, that definitely is a point of concern when you're quarterbacking, because the running backs these days are much more vital to picking up protections and blitzes from the defense, and you rely on them literally. Like, if this guy blitzes, I need to know that my running back knows where he's going and he's not hesitating at all, because all it takes is a split second lapse and all of a sudden you got a free guy rushing off the edge. So it definitely is a comfort thing for a quarterback to know that when you make a mic adjustment or slide the protection one way, your running back automatically knows where he's supposed to go and is in the right spot at all times. And that was something that Lex was actually good at, is being in the right place at the right time for blocking in the passing game. Like you said, Charles struggled with it in the past, but hopefully that thing gets worked out, because I know as a quarterback, you said as a quarterback, there's no worse feeling than your running back tapping you, asking what he's supposed to do or who he's supposed to block, because then you're now focused on the rush instead of focusing on your reads down the field. So it's definitely important. And running backs, and I think centers even more so, have to be very, very instrumental to a quarterback's development and maturation, because they all have to kind of understand the blocking scheme as well. There's a lot of times where the center is pointing out and giving some alerts to the quarterback, and where the running back has to work in concert with the offensive line to know who that unblocked man is going to be. So it's important for the running back to pick it up. Otherwise, the quarterback's going to have a rough night.
There shouldn't be any issue here with motivation, right? I mean, you smoked Southern Utah, but you got a team coming in Arkansas State that you lost against on the road. That can't be an issue, right?
No, absolutely not. There shouldn't be. I mean, even if that weren't the situation, I think there should be plenty of motivation to just start the season with a bang against your non-conference opponent. But yeah, that definitely should add fuel to the fire. This is the last time you as a player are going to play against the Arkansas State team. So it's a chance to go out on top of the series, if you will, for your own, you have some revenge, I guess. And then, you know, some people have some personal stakes here, like some people that had bad games or didn't perform well. You want to put out your best show. And this was a winnable game last season. It went down to the wire. If not for, I think it was the last second drive where we had an opportunity, the Rebels had an opportunity to go back and answer and retake the lead after a rough game out there in Arkansas. So it's a chance to redeem yourself. It's a chance to get fired up and get some payback. So there should be no need for a pep talk with this team coming in, who's going to be hungry. This is a hungry team who just had a nail-biting loss at home in their home opener. And so they definitely have a chip on their shoulder from that. Also, with some of the things that they've been going on in that program with Coach Anderson's wife and the passing. And so they have a lot of fire on that end too. So if you're UNLV, you have to be ready for a fight here, and you should be more than happy to get out there and go to battle with these guys.
Caleb, as we talk about being fired up and having a chip on their shoulder, you know, you look at UNLV, you look at week one, you saw the highlights from Armani Rogers picking up essentially right where he left off. UNLV, Rebel Nation is feeling pretty good as we enter into week two, but I'm curious as to your thoughts, right? Heading into week one before this game, was your mind changed after this game, or are you higher on the Rebels than you were before? Are you same? Are you middle of the road? How are you feeling after what was essentially a serious ass kicking on Saturday?
I feel the same as I felt before, because having watched the practices and seen, you know, the additions and how they fit on the practice field, I had expectations. And I think the way that they handled Southern Utah was, and I think Coach Sanchez would agree, it was along the lines of what he thinks his team has been capable of doing. And not just this season, but in the past. They handled business against a team that right. They were supposed to handle business against. And I think that's comforting as a fan. Yes, you're not taking a step back. It's not, you know, Jackson State where you're a heavy favorite Howard, and you were a heavy favorite and they upset you at your stadium in week one. So it's better than that feeling, of course. But at the same time, you can't get too ahead of yourself, especially it being week one. And you haven't really done anything yet as far as realizing your potential. You did what you were supposed to do and what everybody thought you should do. So that's good for a team that's on the way to being a good team, but really you can't be satisfied with that and get too high. It's like an emotional roller coaster. If you get too high with that, then have you really made it to the point at the program where you feel like you're a good team and are competitive in the conference if you're overjoyed over handling Southern Utah the way you did? I mean, just to put it in context, like a team like Alabama doesn't get hyped when they beat Georgia State. They don't, you know, go celebrate and pop champagne and as if the season – goal has been achieved. They go back to work and get ready for the next opponent with the goal in mind, with the goal of getting to a bowl game or winning national championship, whatever the goal is as a team. This is just one game in that framework. So I think it's good for me personally that they did take care of business, but at the same time, I'm not going to oversell what they did on Saturday because it was just handling business as it should.
Yeah, and this is a totally different test. I mean, last year you saw Justice Hansen, the quarterback for Arkansas State, had a decent game but also hampered by the weather. You mentioned at the start of the interview, and we're talking to Caleb Herring about UNLV and now the game coming up against Arkansas State. Logan Bonner, the new quarterback, threw 50 times the first game. And to me, that's defending the pass is going to be the story of the season for the Rebels. And we're talking about defending it all over the field, but you know specifically it's protecting against the pass over the top because it changes everything in games, and it did last year for UNLV. So this kid, at least coming out of the gates, was freaking awesome with 324 and four touchdowns.
That's right, and he's going to take his shots. I think they've played UNLV in the past. They know what they did to UNLV on their home field last season. This is his first year starting at quarterback, but he was there. He was with the program. He saw the shots that were taken against the secondary last season, and they worked last year. So I'm sure that it's in their game plan to attack the secondary, especially after seeing what the linebacking core and the defensive line did against the run game this past week. I think the game plan obviously would be to attack the secondary. That might be the weakest point of the UNLV defense. So that might be the game plan. The encouraging thing for me, one of the takeaways from last week was it was early. It was an individual play. It was one play, but the deep shot that was taken, there was a one deep shot that was taken early in the game on Miles Plummer, a deep post. And, his man had a step on him, but he was able to get his hand in there with his length and deflect the pass. And it was a true pass breakup. So that kind of play in the past would have been, a huge play for the opponent, a 60-yard completion, possibly even a touchdown. But Plummer was able to keep his wits about him, play the ball in the air, and deflected at the last minute. It was a big play in my mind because it went a long way to saying that this guy might be a good defender as far as defending that big shot play. But they're going to be tested. Arkansas State's going to take their shots. They're going to throw it around. They threw it 50 times last week. And albeit the game was, a nail-biter, and they had to at some points throw it a little bit more than maybe they would have liked to. But there's nothing that would say that they're going to slow it down with Logan Bonner. He's their guy. He threw for 300 yards and four touchdowns, just one interception. With that many attempts at just throwing one interception, that shows that they trust this guy. And obviously, Omar Bayless, the number one receiver, he got 10 receptions for 132 yards, and he had all four of the touchdowns. So he's going to be a key factor for Arkansas State, and UNLV has to be ready for him, especially in the secondary.
I'll give you a name on defense, and we can examine this more tomorrow during the coaches' show. They have a guy in the middle named Forrest Merrill, who is 6'1 and 340. And I don't think he's 6'1". I think he's more like 5'10 or 5'11". He is a freaking truck. And if you remember last year, Caleb, Rebels didn't have a real easy time moving the ball up the middle. So it could be the same case here. They may have to, work to the outside more because this dude is a freaking brick you-know-what house.
Right. And that he's a tree stump in the middle. I mean, it's hard to uproot him. Anybody that has that low center of gravity and is that heavy, and it's hard to move. And it really hurts UNLV because I think the strength of UNLV's running game, we saw it a little bit last week, is the run up the middle, the inside zones up the middle. I think that's if they had it their way, the north and south style of running would be their bread and butter. The stretch play at the sideline, sure, they have the speed to do it, but I think they're more comfortable, the offensive line, at moving people in the middle. And he presents a big problem being that big, that massive on the interior. And you said it last year, it was a problem as well. They couldn't find some traction at times with the run game. But I think it will be a true test. I think he's a big boy in the middle, and it'll be up to some double teams on the inside, some creative play calling, maybe some tempo to try to gas him out early. But there's some things that you can do to get around that, and I think that's going to be one of the things that they have to consider in game planning for this week.
And just looking back on the numbers last year, Lexington Thomas, who's now gone, did have a solid game with 18 carries and 82 yards. But much of that damage was done outside. I think they ran an option to get Evan Owens a touchdown. And then Rodgers, which I would assume, because Armani had such a big game last year, he had a 64-yard run. He had 181 on the ground, and he rushed for 310 overall. They're going to change their defense, which should open things up for everyone else. But there's no way that Anderson watches the tape from a year ago and doesn't go, we have to have a spy on Armani Rodgers. It just has to happen.
Absolutely. With, like you said, the combination of what he did last season and then what he did last week, is there's no way that teams across the country, whoever plays the Rebels, is going to know that he's to be focused on. And what the hope is that opens up the running game, because a lot of the times on the run plays Armani has, he's the second option. These big, that 66-yard run, yeah, he was, it was a designed quarterback run to an extent, but that's a read option where he's naked by himself. It's not like a bunch of blockers out in front of him. It's him kind of making the right read and doing the rest with it by himself. So it's a double-edged sword. If you put somebody on Armani and say that you have to stay with the quarterback, you're basically playing 11-on-10 football. Like you're going to be outmanned. And that's one of the beauties of having a dual-threat quarterback, is you have to respect it. And that gives you one less guy in the box that opens up some running lanes for Charles Williams, who can make explosive plays himself. So there's a lot of things that having Armani on the field does for you, and that is one of them. He has, just the film on him will dictate that teams are going to be worried about him. Whether it's game plan or not, the eyes of the defenders are going to always take a peek just to make sure number one doesn't have the ball. And that little half step could be the difference between a touchdown one for Charles or the other running backs as well.
All right, Caleb. Great job. We'll see you tomorrow at Parkway Tavern.
All right, we'll see you there. Take care, guys.
Tony Sanchez Radio Show, 6 o'clock tomorrow night, Parkway Tavern District. We rotate back and forth with the Sanchez Radio Show. The following week, we'll be at Parkway Tavern at 215 and Flamingo. And, yeah, last year's game, there were a lot of big plays. The weather was terrible, so Armani Rogers had a really tough time throwing the ball. But key plays, the Rebels muffed a punt inside their own 10. That led to a touchdown, so you got a 27-20 final. So that's a killer. And then the defense just wore down a little bit, didn't play good assignment football on a run by Marcel Murray, who is back. That kid was a true freshman a year ago, busted out a 39-yard run around the right side of the line, and that wound up being the clincher as UNLV just couldn't pass the ball down the field in the final couple of minutes. So big game this weekend, 7 o'clock start. Get your tickets now as Arkansas State in town as the Rebels try to start 2-0.
Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews. It's Cofield and Company's Eye on Sports Gambling.
I'm going to kill your bookmaker. I'm going to rip his throat out. I will step on his throat until the man chokes. Let me tell you how. Winners, 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 winners. Free, 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 free.
Time to give away two more entries into the Pro Pick'em Football Contest. That's William Hill's Pro Pick'em Football Contest. $300,000 in cash prizes across the season. These are $25 entries. You get them for free. Callers 1 and 2, 364-1100, 364-1100. If you don't win, get in. The contest begins on Sunday, September 8th. Goes all the way through the 29th. You can go to any full-service William Hill sportsbook in Nevada and get in. Place like Silver Sevens. We'll be there doing our Thursday show every single week. Come down and see us at the Silver and Gold Bar, and you can sign up. So right now, two free entries, 364-1100, 364-1100. When you sign up for the contest, you got $10,000 weekly cash prizes. All you're doing is picking the games straight up, Sunday and Monday games. And at the end of the season, person with the most winners is going to collect $20,000. Someone who finishes, and I'm assuming it's going to be really tough, but with over 200 season wins, woo! In line to receive $100,000 in cash bonuses. So maybe you're the only one. Maybe there's no one. Maybe there's 10. I don't know. That's a tough number. But you're challenging the entire state in this one. William Hill's Pro Pick'em Football Contest, 364-1100, callers 1 and 2. You are good to go. All right, so some breaking news, at least some breaking reporting. I've got Melvin Gordon. You've got Zeke Elliott. So what, rap sheet saying something about Zeke Elliott?
The Eagle has landed, or the Cowboy has landed.
Oh, you blew it.
Sorry. He had Rappaport. Yep, just reporting about 30 minutes ago that Zeke Elliott has landed in Dallas from Cabo. He is headed to the team facility with his agents, and their goal is to finish a deal. Doesn't say today. I would imagine we know that they want to get it done soon, but it's going to make him the highest paid running back in league history. So not a lot that we didn't know heading into the show, but we do have confirmation as far as Ezekiel. He has landed. He is back in the state of Texas, and he does seem somewhat motivated to get a deal done. There's actually also video from the airport, like a random fan got a camera on him.
Are you ready?
He said, I was born ready, or something to that effect. But he looks very relaxed. He looks like he's been a little while since he's had a shave. Looks looks like I have no doubt that he was working down there in Cabo. I'm just saying he also looks like potentially he was relaxing down there.
Would you not be relaxed?
Yeah, I would. Yes.
News on Melvin Gordon. Josina Anderson from ESPN says, I'm told one team has been in prelim communication with the Chargers in an attempt to vet out a potential trade for Gordon per source. So nothing on what team. So maybe there's some movement on Melvin Gordon. I'm not even sure that the Chargers are 100% about trading Melvin Gordon. Who knows if, one, he can find the suitor, two,
right,
get the money he wants, and three, work out a deal. Is this a Jadeveon Clowney type deal like the Texans and Seattle where they're just like, you know what, take him? Or the Chargers, you know, going to find out who the team is, the money's there, and they're like, wait, you're not giving us a boatload back? So, I mean, this is so far from being done. There's a lot to work out here with Melvin Gordon. I want to run numbers by you real quick.
Okay.
If Zeke is signed by, say, tomorrow or Thursday, Friday, mm-hmm, like business as usual in terms of future bets, they're plus 170, at least they were as of a couple days ago, plus 170 to win the NFC East. The Eagles are a big favorite at minus 160. Would you then try to jump on the Cowboys at that number?
No, I feel like it's pretty close. I think the books are pretty much operating under the assumption that Ezekiel Elliott is going to be a part of this team at some point. So, I mean, maybe 20. I mean, I don't really see it moving that much at all. Do you?
Yeah, maybe 20 cents.
Yeah.
Rushing title for the league. Believe it or not, Zeke's actually gone down a little bit. Like, people are betting on him. He's still co-favorite with Saquon Barkley at plus 280. This I would not bet. Like, if you gave me an opportunity head-to-head, a prop with Zeke against Saquon, I don't think Elliott's going to be 100% effective for at least two games. So I'd have to make Barkley a favorite.
But what about where they're going to be at week 10, 11, 12, 13? Like, I could easily see the Giants not wanting to hammer Saquon.
Okay.
You know what I mean? They're going to be out of it.
Sounded like a sharp. Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, they're going to be, out of it. So if we're thinking, if it's, listen, take everyone else outside of that, right? Because as far as Gurley goes and, you know, how's Kareem Hunt going to be in Cleveland? I have no idea how this is going to play out. Head-to-head, though, between Zeke and Saquon, the two guys who are probably favored sitting atop that board, yeah, I mean, I would go Zeke on that just strictly for the way Dallas is going to use him and also the way Dallas is most likely going to be in the playoff picture deep into the—
We got big TV news to get to. I'm very excited, very excited. Day 39 in a row with a Popeye story. That's coming up in the Big Five. And congrats to our winners today of these free entries into the William Hill Pro Pick'em Football Contest. Matt, Robert, Matthew, and Christopher.
Join the conversation on Twitter at ESPN Las Vegas.